Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Gentlemen Start Your Engines edition, as we get you set for Sunday's season opener against the Colts at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. Coming up, my broadcast partner Dave Lapham will join me to discuss several key topics, including the big question going into the season: how much better is the Bengals' offensive line? After my conversation with Lapp, I'll go one-on-one with Bengals quarterback Andy Dalton as he begins his eighth NFL season. And speaking of eight, Andy and his wife JJ are expecting another child in January. Are they trying to catch Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers, who is the father of eight? I will ask Andy that hard-hitting question. We'll get the national perspective on the Bengals from Sirius NFL Radio's Alex Marvez. And in this week's Know the Foe segment, we'll get the Indy Scoop from Mike Wells, who covers the Colts for ESPN. All of that is straight ahead. But first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. It's the greatest invention since spiral-bound books. I spent a lot of time looking through media guides for stats and information during the football season, and it is great when I don't have to mark my plays with little scraps of paper, thanks to spiral binding that makes it easy to leave the book open to a specific page. The Bengals open the regular season against the same team they faced in the final game of the preseason. Indy scored a touchdown with a little more than a minute to go to win that preseason game, but that was basically the JV. The varsity will go at it on Sunday, and the Colts are favored by 3 at home. Time to bring in my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Lap, this is our first podcast since the Bengals' final roster moves. Any surprises?
You know, I think probably the biggest surprise from a positional standpoint is what they decided to do at the tight end H-back, particularly H-back portion of it. Seathan Carter, you know, he's on injured reserve. He got hurt in that last preseason game. But Ryan Hewitt released, now an Indianapolis Colt. But would Seathan Carter have made it? I mean, you almost wonder if Seathan Carter would have made it. Did getting injured, you know, save him another opportunity to grow and improve? Because I think Bill Lazor has gotten away from the fullback, H-back. He wants tight ends, and he wants to utilize them more as receivers. And, you know, for Mason Schreck to make it, that kind of dictated that, I think, that there was a little bit of a philosophical difference in the way they were structuring the roster that way. And but he's going to have to show up on special teams. That's going to be the key, because Ryan Hewitt and Seathan Carter can both give you, you know, that mix of things. But, again, the way special teams are being structured now with the rule changes, faster bodies in space are key. So if you're a bigger body with not great speed like a Ryan Hewitt, Seathan Carter, is that the way special teams are going, or special teams even kind of, you know, developing in a different area as well in terms of body type? So I think some of that all played out. And then probably the biggest concern, I guess, I have, the way the roster is composed at this time, is who's the fourth cornerback? You know, some teams in the league are trying to find their third, and so the Bengals have three. But that fourth one, it's still pretty competitive. I don't think in my mind it's totally been sealed yet, you know, who that fourth guy is going to be when they have to go four corners out there when teams go four and five wide. So that dynamic, I think, still at this stage, there could even be more tweaks to the roster. It's happened before. It could happen again.
You mentioned Ryan Hewitt, who was picked up by this week's opponent, the Indianapolis Colts, just in time for the game. Realistically, how much intel can he provide?
He can provide quite a bit. You know, I mean, I'm sure, and he's smart. I mean, he's a Stanford grad. He's not only, you know, a smart guy, he's football smart. So I think that he was around for Bill Lazor's trying to pick up the pieces of Kenny Zampezi's catastrophe, and then having an offseason to put in his own stuff, and knows all about. He can digest playbooks very quickly, so he knows what it was, what it has evolved to, all the terminology. That's the thing, is, you know, people say, oh, he can tell their defense all the calls. He can false call. You know, if I'm a defensive player and I'm relying on calls that somebody told me the team might make, man, you're in trouble. You know, you can take the bait down to the belly and get hooked pretty big on stuff like that. But there is something to it, It helps build confidence. If they're making calls and then things are unfolding based on what Ryan Hewitt said the calls were going to be, and then he can also show this is their philosophy on route trees, and this is what they're thinking, this is what they're trying to get done. And then the biggest thing is this is this guy's strength. This is this guy's weakness. He struggles with this. He handles this really well. So I'll guarantee you that the coaches have had Ryan Hewitt up in front of multiple position groups giving a dissertation. I would. And it's happened in the past. Teams have brought guys in and then maybe not kept them around all that long. You know, they want to win the opener. And I'm not saying that's going to happen with Ryan Hewitt. He'll probably make a contribution, a good one, to the Indianapolis Colts. But in the early stages, you know, there is a little bit of that factor. And you just can't get in your own head about it. You can't say, do we have to change all of our calls because of Ryan Hewitt? You know, I don't think you overreact. But there may be some reality where the defense comes off the field. Dude, they did exactly what you said. They made this call and they did exactly what you said they were going to do. You know, that could take place a little bit.
The Bengals have their core of veteran Pro Bowlers. Andy Dalton, A.J. Green, Carlos Dunlap, Geno Atkins. They found a way to keep Michael Johnson on the roster. And yet, despite that, statistically, this is the second youngest team by age in the NFL. Only the Cleveland Browns have a younger roster. Did the Bengals intentionally go young, or did young guys just beat out older guys?
Yeah, I think it's a combination. I think they did want it to get younger faster. But with that said, they had to earn it, the younger guys, and I think they did. 35 of their 53-man roster is 25 years old or younger. 35 of them. So you got to. It stands to reason that even if every guy that's deactivated is under 30, 35 or under, still over half of their roster on game day, their 46-man roster is going to be 25 years old or younger. Now, they have had some of those guys take significant snaps, you know, important snaps. It's not like they're totally, you know, wet behind the ears, but there are some young guys that haven't played much. 22 draft picks in the last 2 years, 16 are on the roster. And then there's a couple more in injury reserve. There's only like three guys in those last two drafts that aren't here anymore. There's not very many guys. So their philosophy of draft, develop, retain is showing up in this roster. And last year, they had 23 players 25 years or younger. This year it's 35. Dramatic shift, dramatic difference there. The record is the 1993 team had the record with 34 people under 25 years old or younger. The Bengals could break that record depending on what happens as the final, you know, shifts here in the final few days before the opener. But bottom line is it's a young football team. But I think Marvin Lewis feels that it's a young football team that does have some experience under their belt.
The biggest thing the Bengals had to fix after last season was the offensive line. How much better is it?
I think it is a work in progress, but I just think there's been a huge attitude adjustment. There's been a huge culture change. Frank Pollock is a no-nonsense guy. I mean, he is. He's old school. This is the way it's going to be. And it's no longer a democracy. I think it's a dictatorship. It was a little bit of a democracy, I think. Not to say that he doesn't take input from players, because he does. And he's got some veteran players that have played a lot of snaps in the NFL. But I think he makes the final decisions. I don't think any coach shuts your ears to guys that know what they're talking about with respect to football. Clint Bowling is smart, and he's seen every defense, and he's played every position. I if I'm a coach, I listen to Clint Bowling, but, you know, as an example. But I think they still need time to meld and work together, Dan. You know, we talk about it a lot, making a fist. To me, it's the greatest example. You know, four fingers curl, four fingers wrap the thumb. It just happened. You don't have to think about it. It's involuntary. And if your offensive line's playing that way, unspoken communication, they just look and wink, and you know what, you're each other's on the same page. And if you're not, and you can only curl three and wrap a thumb, you don't have a fish. You don't have a very strong unit. So they're still developing that way. But Frank's techniques are so much more aggressive. I would love to play with the techniques that Frank's teaching. I think it gives you a chance. I think the pocket's a lot firmer. Andy Dalton led the NFL with 130 quarterback rating, better than 130. Only three sacks allowed. I mean, you know, some good indicators. It is only the preseason, but I think the pocket's firmer. I think play action pass looks a lot better. There's going to be more holes there. They got to get the running game going, and then everything else falls into place.
Let's look ahead to Sunday when Andrew Luck takes the field at quarterback for the Colts. It'll be his first real game in 616 days. What do you expect out of number 12?
I think he's going to be nervous. I do. You know, I think he's I think he's in his head a little bit still, I think. I mean, he's obviously had a lot of things done. You know, he's tried procedures and rehabilitation that are fairly revolutionary. And sometimes you just don't know until you are under the gun, the total gun, not the preseason gun, but the regular season gun. And I think he's going to be nervous going to that football game. And I think it's the biggest key in the game is to keep him nervous, make him uncomfortable, make him think, you know, this guy got hit 400 times in his first five seasons. 400 times. I mean, it's ridiculous, the numbers. He's been 46 different offensive line combinations from 2012 to 2016. He got hit 400 times. Sacked 156 times in 71 appearances. Over 2 a game, 2.2 a game. I mean, he's only been in 19 of the last 45 games. I think he's going to be nervous. This offensive line contributed to the worst sack ratio in the NFL, minus 31. They gave up 56 sacks, most in the league. Defense only accumulated 25, second fewest. Minus 31 sack total. Andrew Luck will be looking at that and thinking, you know, I know they're trying to build it from the inside out. You know, they drafted Quentin Nelson, sixth pick in the draft. Ryan Kelly's first rounder recently out of Lakota, Alabama. They got Costanzo out of BC, first round pick, albeit a few years ago. Solid. Left side, solid. Right side, maybe not so solid. But I think Andrew Luck, I think he's trying to convince himself everything's fine until it's not. The Bengals are going to make sure it's not.
Rest your eyes, because we are way up high at Lucas Oil Stadium.
Well, you ain't kidding, Coach. I'm going to get Visine. I'm going to get, I don't know, I may have to try to find some Superman drops and see if I can get X-ray vision or something. Yeah, we are up there.
An all-carrot diet for the two of us between now and then.
Exactly. You silly wabbit.
Dalton catches the football. He's back to throw. Inches up in the pocket. Throws.
Yeah.
Caught by Boyd.
Get in.
To the 15.
Get in.
The 10.
Yeah.
The 5. Touchdown. Tyler Boyd.
Man.
On 4th and 12.
Man.
It's a 49-yard touchdown.
Ooh, baby.
And the Bengals lead with 44 seconds to go.
That's how last season ended for Andy Dalton and the Bengals. A 49-yard touchdown pass on New Year's Eve in Baltimore that made Dalton the most popular person in Buffalo since the inventor of the snowblower. Andy has picked up right where he left off. He's been very sharp throughout training camp and the preseason, directing a new offense installed by Bill Lazor. I spoke to Dalton in the Bengals locker room. Andy, you had the highest passer rating of any quarterback in the NFL in the preseason, 130.9. That includes a pick six where John Ross fell down. If he stays on his feet and just drops the ball, your passer rating is 144.3. What do those numbers say about the offense and you going into your eighth year?
Yeah, I think it's just efficiency, and it's what you want to see. I mean, for us, I think you know, one reason it's so high is because we was able to have touchdown passes in there as well. And so, you know, I thought we were efficient where I was putting the ball and with my accuracy, and guys were making plays. And so there's a lot of run after catch, too, in that. So, yeah, I think it just shows what this offense can be.
Back to John Ross. You hit him with that 57-yard touchdown pass in Buffalo. He almost had another long one from Matt Barkley last week against the Colts. What does putting that on tape due to opposing defensive coordinators?
Yeah, I think they just have to respect his speed and respect the downfield throws. I think that's one thing that he has shown that he can do. I mean, I think everybody knows with how fast he ran in the 40 at the combine and all that kind of stuff. Everybody knows he's got speed. Now you've seen it on tape. And so, you know, teams are going to have to respect that.
For visiting with Andy Dalton, you weren't sacked in the preseason. Bengals quarterbacks in general only went down 3 times. What do you notice different about the offensive line with Frank Pollock in charge?
Yeah, I think he's done a good job of, you know, getting these guys playing physical and guys just meshing, being on the same page with how we're protecting things. And so, I mean, anytime you can say you didn't get sacked in preseason, that's a good thing.
Sacks on everything, though. Do you notice a difference in the time and space?
For sure. You know, I think you know, I've definitely had more space, and I think that's one thing that we were trying to get these you know, after you know, the way things kind of were before. But I think everybody's done a great job, and the guys we got playing are have really bought into Frank and how he's coaching it.
Andy, there's a video on the Bengals website of every throw you made in the Buffalo game, your last preseason game. And there were about three throws in that game that were ridiculously accurate, tiny little windows where you fit the ball in. Are you throwing it better than you ever have before? And if so, why?
Yeah, I feel really confident with the way the ball's coming out of my hand. And I think one thing is up front, I've got the time and space to do it. And, our guys are able to make tough catches. And so I think just being accurate with the ball is what you try to be as a quarterback. And I feel really good about the way I've been playing.
Bill Lazor's your fourth offensive coordinator in your eight NFL seasons. He's an Ivy Leaguer. He played quarterback at Cornell. Describe him and what stands out in how he is trying to take advantage of your strengths.
He understands how he wants things done, and there's a reason behind why we're doing everything, and he explains it. And so I think he makes guys understand what we're doing, makes guys play fast, and so they're not thinking as much. And I think that's what you want as a coach, especially when you're calling plays. You want your guys to play fast and just react and trust what we're doing.
If there's one negative in the preseason, it was yards per carry in the running game. 1.8 yards per carry for Joe Mixon, 3.1 for Gio. Is that a matter of the offensive line still gelling? Is it not wanting to show the opposition exactly what you want to do in the running game? What explains that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of factors that go into it, but I think this offense knows that we need to get improve in that area, and we need to be able to run the ball. And so I expect us to be better than what we showed in the preseason, and only time will tell to see how good we are.
Final question for Andy Dalton. You're the proud father of two sons. You've got a daughter on the way in January. Are you and JJ going after Philip Rivers of the Chargers, father of eight?
No, we're not. We're going to let him have that title. I don't think we'll be close to that.
All right, congratulations on a great preseason, and thank you and JJ for all you've done for sick children and special needs children. It is awesome. We wish you a great season.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Dalton is 3-1 in four regular season starts against the Colts with six touchdown passes and no INTs. So I have in front of me this year's Sports Illustrated football preview issue. It includes predictions for every NFL team, and the good folks at SI predict the Bengals will go 4-12 this season. Huh? They also rank the Bengals' front seven on defense 29th out of 32 NFL teams. If a front seven that includes Geno Atkins, Carlos Dunlap, Carl Lawson, Preston Brown, and Vontaze Burfict, eventually, is only the 29th best front seven in the NFL, then I am a dead ringer for George Clooney. There is at least one NFL insider who thinks Cincinnati might be a contender. Alex Marvez used to cover the Bengals for the Dayton Daily News and now is one of the hosts on Sirius NFL Radio. He joined Dave Lapham and me on the Bengals Game Plan Show on Wednesday night.
I'm trying so hard not to fall in love. I'm trying not to fall in love with this team.
Just give into it.
But I see the Buffalo game. I see what this team can be. And I know it's preseason football. I understand that. But I see John Ross, you know, making Vontae Davis do a little pirouette like he was a ballerina on that 57-yard touchdown. Right. I see Andrew – I don't know if you know this. Vlad Dukas right now is in Lake Erie because Andrew Billings has pushed him back so darn far. That's where he is. He is swimming back to shore at this point. I see Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap, two of the stalwarts on this Bengals team, being rewarded for their efforts and what they still continue to bring, even in their late 20s, early 30s. I mean, I see an improvement. Improved offensive line. I see Joe Mixon starting to step up a little bit, and I see Gio Bernard, you know, I think a guy really underrated that can do so many things on this offense. I see the return of Tyler Eifert. I see young talent in that secondary. What am I missing here? I mean, this is like, oh my goodness, and yet from time to time we've seen talented Bengals teams that have fallen short. So do I want to get my heart broken again? Do I want to believe in this Bengals team? Do I want to take that chance? I've been wrestling with this for the past couple weeks.
Well, if you do take the chance, you'll be the only national media that does. They're not under the radar. They're off the radar. There is no radar. I mean, they're a three-point underdog in this football game, which, you know, hey, I can understand. Everybody, until the Bengals have to be the mindset of a Missourian, show me state, show us something. I understand that, but they better go and show something in Indianapolis, there's no doubt.
I can't believe the Bengals are underdogs. I don't even think this game's close. I mean, I don't even know who's starting at running back for the Colts. Robert Turbin suspended. Marlon Mack is injured. He's limited. You've got Anthony Costanzo is limited with a hamstring injury.
Right.
Every time Carlos Dunlap plays against the Colts, he's the starting running back for Indianapolis because he's in the backfield so much. You understand what I'm saying?
I hear you.
He's unbelievable against that team. The Colts defense, I mean, it's just, I mean, they're cutting guys like John Simon. They're trading Antonio Morrison because they're still shifting to a 4-3 defense. I mean, I'm surprised the Bengals aren't favored by a touchdown or more, to be honest with you. And you know, it's interesting, though. Look, people have seen this Bengals team. They've lost faith in Marvin Lewis. They've lost faith in Andy Dalton. In fact, I will tell you, when it comes to preseason buzz, you're right. It's almost like there's a three-team AFC North.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. You're right.
I mean, that's what it's become. Everyone's talking Cleveland because of Hard Knocks and, you know, the insanity that's going on up there. In Baltimore, you know, it's been Lamar Jackson and Joe Flacco, people talking about that. And, of course, as the Steelers turn with the self-inflicted drama of the Pittsburgh organization, but still a very talented team, but people are forgetting about the Houdays. And I don't think they should. I think this is one of the most talented teams. And, plus, guys, you know, Terrell Austin, 2 years ago, was considered a really hot head coaching candidate.
Right.
And I don't think that in Detroit he ever had the talent to that he has now with the Cincinnati Bengals. He was a very good coach, and as the talent went down, sometimes a coach is like that. You can only make so much chicken salad, right? So in this case now, with Terrell Austin running this show, I really feel encouraged about this defense. I think the best is yet to come. And you know, with what Andy Dalton can provide with this offense with just a little bit of time from the O-line, man, oh, man, I really think this could be a really nice bounce-back season for the Bengals. But again, I've had my heart broken before.
Yes, sir.
Alex Marvez from Sirius NFL Radio is our guest. You can follow him on Twitter at Alex Marvez, M-A-R-V-E-Z. Alex, you wrote about A.J. Green for the Sporting News earlier in the offseason. What was your big takeaway from your conversation with A.J.?
You know, he was frustrated about Andy Dalton's lack of time, you know, when it came to protection. You know, that was one of the things, you know, and it was, you know, obviously disrupting the offense. And, you know, we got a taste of it in week two when the Bengals played against the Cowboys and Andy was, again, unable to step up in the pocket. The Cowboys, I think, have a pretty underrated defense, by the way, so I'm not going to throw this all on the offensive line. But, you know, unable to, you know, when he's throwing off his back foot, it obviously you're not going to be as accurate with the deep throws. But he was effusive in his praise of John Ross, which we've seen, you know, A.J. just couldn't stop talking about how, you know, look, the guy weathered the storm. He had a really rough rookie season, but all he's done is put his head down and worked. Got in the weight room. He's healthy now. He's got his confidence back. I mean, so he was espousing those things all the way back, you know, in the spring, you know, about May. And, you know, just a pep in everyone's step. You know, I mean, how does Marvin Lewis want to be remembered? Do you want to be that guy that coached for a team for two decades? And we're coming up on two decades of Marvin Lewis, right? That's coached the team for as long as he has without winning a playoff game. Is this how you want to be remembered in NFL history? I mean, no. You know what I mean? Obviously not. So I think Marvin understands there's a sense of urgency here to get this done. Yeah, he got a contract extension, and I get all that. But at some point, you know, at some point, I really do believe at some point, Mike Brown's patience would run thin if this team doesn't have a winning season this year, that doesn't get into the playoffs, because I really feel like the front office has put them in position to succeed. I feel like they've made significant changes on the roster in terms of changes on the offensive line that I think were for the better. I really think that the drafts have been pretty darn solid through the years for this team. You look at Jesse Bates now already making an impact, leading to the release of George Aloka. I just feel like this team is ready right now to get back into the postseason. You know, again, if things fall their way, and they got to, you know, and look, statement games too. I know that Paul Dana of the Cincinnati Inquirer wrote about how, you know, Pittsburgh is those pivotal games. You know what I mean? And you got to beat Pittsburgh to get to where you want to go. I just want to see more consistency from the Bengals. I you know, when you lose to bad teams, which they did last year at times, that's not the sign of a winning team, and it ends up costing you in the long run. That's the big thing for the Bengals. Can they beat those teams they're supposed to beat? I'm okay if you lose to some really good other teams. I get all that. But are you going to let some of these lousy teams, like the Chicago Bears last year, what was that? I mean,
got
I'm still
thrashed.
Trying to figure that game out.
Didn't just lose,
you know,
got thrashed.
Right. It was awful. You can't lose those types of games. It's just this league is just too competitive. And really, the AFC North is going to be better this year. Even if Pittsburgh takes a step back like I expect, I think Baltimore is really right back in that mix. And obviously Cleveland, you know, they've done some really nice things. And I think they're going to be a little bit nasty on offense running the football. And I like that defensive line. So it's not a cakewalk for the Bengals, obviously. But you just can't lose to teams that are worse than you.
That's Alex Marvez from Sirius NFL Radio. When Andrew Luck takes the field on Sunday, it will be his first regular season game since New Year's Day 2017. That's more than 600 days ago.
The injuries that he's dealt with over the last 3 years include a lacerated kidney, a partially torn abdominal muscle, bruised ribs, and a torn labrum in his shoulder. That last injury is the one that caused him to miss all of last season. Mike Wells covers the Colts for ESPN, and when he joined us on the Bengals Game Plan show, I asked him if Andrew Luck is close to being the quarterback he was before all the injuries.
You know what? I'm on the 98.9% train on Andrew Luck being back. It's that 1.1% that I can't buy into because I fell. Anybody who has seen Beverly Hills Cop knows the reference to falling for the banana in the tailpipe. And I fell for that last year with owner Jim Irsay when he said Andrew Luck was going to be totally fine. Andrew Luck has checked off all the boxes up to this point. He's been sacked. He's been hit while scrambling. He's able to make every throw in the playbook, but we only saw a small sample size of it. He played 11 series in the preseason. Now we're going to see, can he do it over the course of a complete game? It's been almost 20 months since Andrew Luck has played a full game. So come this Sunday, let him get over this final hurdle, and then I'll have a better, you know, indication on if Andrew Luck can be back to being the same player he was in 2014 when he was considered one of the top five or six quarterbacks in the NFL.
A couple of questions about Ryan Hewitt, waived by the Bengals, claimed by the Indianapolis Colts. Obviously, the Stanford connection, Andrew Luck, Ryan Hewitt. How big do you think Andrew Luck had a voice in any of that? Players normally don't, I would think. The other question is, how much have you heard that Ryan Hewitt has been standing up and giving dissertations about everything he knows about the Cincinnati Bengals since he was waving that final cut?
Well, I got to tell you something. This is the most I've heard the name Ryan Hewitt mentioned because, you know, the thing with Andrew Luck is he's not one of those guys that wants to sit there and try to jump in and try to be in the forefront of things as far as roster moves goes.
Right.
Andrew Luck, he simply cares, all he cares about is getting better and becoming a good teammate and being the best quarterback that he possibly can be. He's not one of those hands-on quarterbacks who where just because he's in the making $140 million, he's not going to get in and try to get involved in things that he doesn't know about.
He's not LeBron. He's not the LeBron of India.
Exactly. Yes, yes. He is not Andrew Luck is not LeBron, and Frank Wright is not Ty Lue.
Right.
So basically, it's not one of those situations. What Ryan Hewitt is, he's providing depth at the tight end position because they've got three solid tight ends. Quite honestly, I consider the tight end position the deepest on this roster for the Indianapolis Colts when you have Jack Doyle coming off a Pro Bowl season. Eric Ebron, who's kind of trying to redeem himself after a slow start to his career in Detroit, and also Eric Swope, who is a former college basketball player who has a lot of athleticism. So essentially, what Hewitt is, he's providing depth, and he's going to be more of a blocking tight end than a pass-catching tight end. Those first three guys I alluded to are all pass catchers. Mm-hmm. Hewitt's going to be kind of the hybrid fullback for the Colts if he gets on the football field.
We are talking to Mike Wells, who covers the Colts for ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at MikeWellsNFL. Mike, the Colts were in the AFC Championship game in 2014. Since then, 8-8, 8-8, 4-12. Andrew Luck's injuries are a huge part of that, but not all. Where did things go wrong in Indy?
Well, when the former general manager Ryan Grayson, he basically took all his poker chips after they got to the AFC Championship game and went out and signed players on the decline of their career, meaning the Frank Gores and the Andre Johnsons and Todd Harrimans and the Trent Coles, thinking those guys could basically be plug-and-play players so the Colts could get past Tom Brady and the Patriots in the AFC the following year, completely imploded. Like you alluded to, you know, back-to-back 8-8 seasons, a 4-12 record last year, haven't been back to the playoffs since then. Grayson tried to take a shortcut and did not try to build the roster through the draft. You can always add pieces, but you can't sit here and try to overhaul things with guys that are on the decline of their career. And now they don't have any players from the 2013 draft on the roster still. No players from the 2014 draft on the roster. And you're not going to sustain success by cutting corners. And that's what happened to the Indianapolis Colts. You're right. Andrew Luck is part of the reason why the Colts have missed the playoffs for three straight years, but he's not completely at fault. And that's why with Frank Wright and Chris Ballard, the new general manager, They're basically, they don't want it all to be about Andrew Luck. Yes, the same way it's about Andy Dalton. He's important to the Bengals. They don't want to make the quarterback the only person that can lead this team to victories. They want him to be a big proponent of it, but they want to have pieces around him for if somebody gets injured. And that's why Jacoby Brissett is still on this roster. Because if something were to happen to Andrew Luck, they want to have a very solid backup who can step in and start. Frank Wright saw that last year in Philadelphia when Carson Wentz tore his ACL in December. Nick Foles comes in and beats Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. So they're trying to build a complete team here in Indianapolis. And it's they won't come out and publicly say it, but this franchise is in a clear rebuilding mode.
Let me address the coaching staff with you a little bit, if I could. Frank Reich, Josh McDaniel takes it, gives it back. Doesn't want to follow through. He hires Eberflus. The Colts organization admirably says, Matt Eberflus, you're our defensive coordinator. Frank Reich, first-time head coach. Nick Seriano, first-time offensive coordinator. Matt Eberflus, first-time defensive coordinator. Bubba Ventrone, first-time special teams coordinator. He was an assistant in New England. Did he come with Josh McDaniel as well?
No. Okay. Bubba came in afterwards.
Okay, so Frank Reich went against him in the Super Bowl. Philadelphia, New England probably said, okay, yeah, let's give this a shot. Any concern with fan base or anybody that every single phase of the football team from a coaching standpoint is first-timers?
Well, yeah, it's got to be a concern. And let's take it a step further. Frank Reich is also calling the plays.
Right.
That is a lot to put on a plate for a first-time head coach because you want to be the play caller and you have first-timers in those lead roles as offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, and special teams coach.
And he didn't call plays in Philly, right? He didn't call the plays.
No,
he was the coordinator, and Doug Peterson called the plays.
Exactly. And the good thing is he was with Peterson and he learned from that. But on the flip side, this is not like with the L.A. Rams with Sean McVay last year where he had a veteran defensive coordinator in Wade Phillips.
Right.
A guy where you did not have to look and see how the defense is going.
Right.
You're talking about Eberflus, who nobody knows what type of coordinator he's going to be at. So this defense on paper doesn't look good, does not look good at all. No pass rushers. Linebackers are a mystery. So it's not like there's talent and experience in the coordinator spot. Frank Wright's trying to call plays. Keep an eye on Andrew Luck. This is like basically Frank Reich's plate is like going to a buffet. It's fully loaded, and now we're going to see if Frank Reich can be able to eat it all and handle this because if not, there's going to be question marks about that.
Couple more minutes with Mike Wells, who covers the Colts for ESPN. Their best running back, Marlon Mack, didn't practice today because of a hamstring injury. Veteran Robert Turbin is suspended for the first four games after a PED suspension. Who's going to carry the ball for the Colts on Sunday?
It's anybody's guess. I mean, it's a long shot for Marlon Mack to play. He has not played since the August 9th first preseason game against Seattle. There's a chance that Andrew Luck to be handing the ball off to rookie Jordan Wilkins out of Mississippi. Christine Michael, a veteran guy, is a candidate to start also. And then there's also another rookie, Nyheim Hines, out of North Carolina State. But Hines had a tough time holding up to the football as a return specialist. And you don't want to put a guy out there who's scared to hold a football. He's got a lot of speed, but if he can't hold the ball, you also just put him, make him a defensive player. So there's question marks there. You got question marks with left tackle Anthony Costanzo. Costanzo was a limited participant in practice on Wednesday, but that was his first practice in 5 weeks. And Cincinnati, as you guys know, the strong suit for the Bengals is their front. And you're dealing with a Colts offensive line that has been flat out atrocious in Andrew Luck's career. If I'm on that D-line of the Bengals, I'm feasting. I'm ready to come eat, especially if Costanzo doesn't play. With left tackle, question marks, and then right tackle position was also a disaster in the preseason. It's not, you want Andrew Luck back, but at the same time, you got to find a way to protect that franchise quarterback, which means probably a lot of quick throws.
Our thanks to Mike Wells from ESPN for that conversation. And here's one final note on the Colts. They have a new offensive coordinator this year named Nick Sirianni. His dad, Fran, was my high school track coach. It is truly a small world. That is going to do it for this episode of the podcast. Our next edition will be posted in time for your ride to work on Monday with radio replays and locker room comments following the season opener in Indy. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. And give us a rating.
or leave a comment. Your feedback has been extremely helpful, and 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.